Stay tuned for Building Knowledge with Building and Realty Institute host Jeff Hanley. Mr. Hanley is the Associate Director of BRI, and every Friday morning at 11:30, you'll have the opportunity of learning to build your knowledge about planning, insurance, environmental regulations, and everything you need to know on the local level to build your knowledge. Here now is Jeff Hanley.
Good morning, and a happy Friday to all. Welcome to Building Knowledge with the Building and Realty Institute, the official radio show of the Building and Realty Institute, which is also known as the BRI, as well as the Builders Institute. I am Jeff Hanley, Associate Executive Director of the BRI and your program host. We thank you for joining us this morning on WVOX 1460 AM, as well as worldwide on WVOX.com. We are coming to you live from the WVOX studios in New Rochelle, and again, many thanks for joining us. For first-time listeners, we will explain what the Building and Realty Institute is. Our association is a building, realty, and construction industry membership organization. The BRI is composed of more than 1,800 members in 14 counties of New York State. We are truly a statewide business organization. Those members are involved in virtually every sector of the building, realty, and construction industry. The BRI represents our members and the building, realty, and construction sectors on a 24/7 basis. If you are involved in the building, realty, or construction industries in any ways, we are most definitely the membership organization for you and for your business. And throughout 2020, we are marking the 74th anniversary of our formation. As I mentioned, we are live, and we are coming to you from the studios of WVOX 1460 AM. If you have any questions or comments regarding the content of this morning's program, please feel free to give us a call at 914-636-0110. That's 914-636-0110. Our program this morning will focus on the housing and human services roles that Community Housing Innovations of White Plains, which is also known as CHI, offers to members of the building, realty, and construction industry, as well as to the general public. Our guest is Alec Robert. He is the executive director of CHI. He has been on our program on several occasions in the past, and we welcome Alec Roberts back to Building Knowledge with the Building and Realty Institute. Good morning, Alec. How are you?
Good morning, Jeff, and it's a pleasure to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you back. We thank you for giving us your time on this Friday morning. Can you briefly describe the role of CHI, of course, otherwise known as Community Housing Innovations?
Well, CHI was started back in 1991 as an organization to provide housing and services for the homeless. We initially started in Westchester. We branched out to Suffolk County and Long Island, and now we're the largest provider of emergency housing for the homeless outside of the city. We have about 1,000 beds. And basically, I started the agency after being a news reporter for almost 20 years in New York, and I had covered the welfare hotel scandals at that time in the late 80s and saw this burgeoning problem of homelessness coming out. And I really felt called kind of to do something about it. I was really affected by seeing, you know, families, mothers, children being stuck in squalor, motels, no services or anything. And I can say that in the last 29 years, and it's been that long, which is amazing, I started this out of my house in Rye Brook. And basically, I remember asking my wife, we seem to be growing a little bit. Should we take over another bedroom? And she said, no, get out of the house. And basically, we now have, I'm glad she did, because we have 300 employees now.
Wow.
in five counties and a, you know, a budget of about $33 million. So, but unfortunately, when I originally went to it, I was an investigative news reporter. And this was a new, completely new thing, this whole idea of family homelessness. There had always been, you know, the on the Bowery, there were people down on their luck, single men, primarily some single women who had fallen into hard times, et cetera. But this was something completely new in the late 80s when we found people just starting to come out that were situationally homeless, meaning they didn't have mental illness or anything. They just started, they just couldn't afford, couldn't afford a home. And that was exacerbated by changes in the society itself, mores, where basically you found a lot more mothers with children, single mothers. And now, of course, we know that the amount of single motherhood, single parent households has actually exploded to the point where it's in the general community, it's over 40% of children are being born out of wedlock. And when you have a single parent, it's extremely difficult, especially in this environment with tremendous housing costs, et cetera, to function, especially if you have small children. And I've seen this, I see this in our shelters, where the majority are single mothers with children. It's very difficult. How do they take care of children and earn enough money to maintain a home? So that is an inherent systemic problem that has only gotten worse. And in the last, I would say about 7 years or so, I've really tried to focus on what are the solutions to this. Yes, I mean, shelters have improved tremendously. We have they're very, very well run. They're clean, they're inspected, they're audited, and that's great. And we have social workers that really are there to help people. But I'm finding that the pipeline is not being reduced. And that's because of larger problems, which is the lack of affordable housing. So CHI, as I say, we do a lot of shelters and housing for homeless individuals and singles. We also do some permanent housing, several hundred units of apartments, especially for people with special needs. It's called supportive housing, where basically if someone might have a mental illness or a substance abuse issue, we will provide housing for those people in apartments, along with a social services component. A lot of my employees, most of them, are they're case managers providing services for the people. We also do foreclosure counseling. I invite anybody in Westchester County. We're funded by the state primarily. We provide free assistance and counseling. We will help with court issues. We will help people put together what are called loan modifications for those who are in trouble. And that has been very successful also since the financial crisis. We've stepped up to the plate for that. We also are one of the largest providers of down payment assistance. Mm-hmm. And that is for home buyers who typically earn up to 90% of the area median income, which for a family of four is about $90,000, something like that, a little over 90 actually. And I would urge people to come to our website. We've given away, I would say, over $17 million in the last 20 years to about 750 first-time home buyers. We provide a really robust program of counseling for them to make sure that they're ready to become homeowners. And we've been extremely successful in that, one of the most successful in the state in terms of our foreclosure rates, et cetera, because we really make sure that they are ready to own a home. Because it is a very daunting task. There's so much involved with owning a home.
Absolutely.
From understanding mortgages, what is a good deal, your budget, insurance, maintenance issues. We make sure that all of the homes are inspected. And we provide down payment assistance of up to $40,000, which includes a component of half for renovation. That's a requirement. In effect, we're giving maybe 10-15% of the cost of the home, especially in the down payment, which is the hardest thing to come up with. But the home is 10 times typically the cost. It's at least, say, $250,000 in Westchester. So that people are coming for the free money, but most important really is the counseling that they mm-hmm. receive. And we really have all of our counselors are certified, and they've been doing it for a long time. They're very successful at it.
You mentioned the CHI website. That's chigrants.org, I believe?
Yes, it's chigrants.org or communityhousing.org. Either one will get you to the website. And we have all of the resources there. We have the application for the down payment assistance. It's very straightforward. It's done first come, first serve. There are income limits, as I mentioned. Typically, it's up to 90% of the area median income, which is pretty high in Westchester.
Yes, absolutely. Why don't we give the phone numbers of your two offices? You have one office in White Plains, and you have another office in Patchogue, out in Suffolk County, correct?
Correct. So in White Plains, it's 914-683-1010. And actually, you can access Patchogue as well from there. But if you want to do direct in Suffolk County, it's 631-475-6390.
Okay. Important stuff. Absolutely. No question about it. Okay. There are other services that CHI offers. Some of them include services to developers. Can you touch on that a bit, please?
Right. Well, we also do development, and we partner with developers. We've done some very good projects where basically we can bring in about $200,000 a unit for supportive housing, which has been a big commitment by this governor, about $1 billion to provide housing for people with special needs. And we provide the funding. We help with the providing, the applications. We provide the program for the particular population, whether it's for the mentally ill or for veterans or whatever. We're very happy to partner with developers on that. We very often fill a gap in trying to make a project work, especially the affordable housing part, as the cost of construction, as we know, and the cost of getting approvals has just skyrocketed. It's extremely difficult to provide affordable housing without significant subsidies.
Alex, CHI has been involved in citing the need for workforce housing in our region for some time. Can you explain the terms workforce housing and affordable housing and explain the differences? There often is confusion among those terms.
There are differences. Affordable housing is defined basically by the federal government as housing for families or singles. For rental, it's 60% of the area median income, okay, that for household income. And for ownership, it's up to 80% of the area median income. So 60%, you're looking at about, say for two people, it's about $55,000 a year. 80%, you're looking at about $77,000, mm-hmm. something like that. The workforce housing takes in a little bit higher rate, and that number has continued to go up. Now a lot of cities that are trying to do something about affordable housing have affordable programs that are really not affordable. They're not at the affordable level. They're really at the workforce housing level, which is about 80%. To give you an idea of the differences in that, you're looking at, say, a two-bedroom is about $1,687 for the affordable, but it's for the 80% AMI for these some of these projects that are being done in White Plains, et cetera, it's $2,100. So there's quite a big difference between that.
Yeah.
And we're starting to fudge the difference, I think. So when cities are saying we're producing affordable housing, it's not really affordable. And I pointed that out, and I'm going to point it out a lot more, I think, coming up, because we can't say we're meeting our affordable housing needs by producing two bedrooms at $2,100. That is helping a workforce component. There's no question about it. That's below what many of these new apartments are renting for. They're renting for $3,500, something like that, $3,200 to $3,500, which is the market rents in White Plains for these new developments. But $2,100 is a lot, and it while it does address people that really need the housing, it's a lot worse for the people that need housing at $1,200, $1,500, that kind of thing.
Right. We do have a caller. Caller, welcome to Building Knowledge with the Building and Realty Institute. You have a question for Alec Roberts?
Yes. I just want to know when he's going to keep fighting for more housing. Jim Killoran, I just want to say thank you for having him on, Jeff. And, he's been the George Raymond of today. doing a great job, and you know he's brilliant on the stuff. I see people exiting all the time, New York, and we're the most exited state. That's because no one can afford to live here. And there's been no co-op city, no ownership been made on any real level. So we're in a real crisis, and I go out to the homeless on the streets in Manhattan. And so anyway, I just want to thank Alex and look forward to getting our coalition together, Al. And Jeff, you've done a great job on a number of radio mediums, and I appreciate listening to you. So I'm sorry for interrupting, but God bless you.
Jim, thank you so much for the call. We appreciate it. I know Alex also appreciates it.
Yeah, Jim was a co-founder of our Westchester Workforce Housing Coalition that was extremely successful starting in 2014 when we stopped the Avalon project because there was no affordable housing as part of the component. And we spoke before the MTA and that was ready to just approve this deal with Harrison, and they actually stopped it. And we got 5%, which sounds small, but it was the first time in 30 years that Harrison had actually agreed to include it. And Jim was a great partner and will continue to be. And we really, we have to, I guess, you know, we've got to be re-energized because there's a new needs assessment that just came out about a month ago or so, which shows that the problems are now critical. You know, we've been knowing that, for example, the majority of renters in actually over 50% of the renters in Westchester County are paying more than what the federal government says is affordable, which is 30% of their income, which is a very high number.
Needs assessment study was produced by Westchester County itself.
That is correct. The needs assessment. And I'll go into it. I've got, if you're interested, I can give you some statistics of what it came out.
Yeah, let's do that. We've got about 11 to 12 minutes left. So let's go into that study. Yeah, because that's a very, very important study. Absolutely.
Right. Well, the study found some very interesting facts, which were that owners are also suffering in Westchester County. That basically something like 40% of owners are paying more than 30% of their income for rent. And some of them were making less money, you know, more like 50% of the area median income. Almost all of them are paying as over 50% of their income for rent, which is called severely cost burden. Couple of interesting parts of the report. I'll just go for a couple of facts. There are 345,885 housing units. 81% of the units in the county were built before 1979. So we have a real aging
housing
infrastructure.
Absolutely.
Aging. Not surprisingly, the period between 1950 and 59 saw the most housing production, and municipalities had 20% of the housing stock built just during those 10 years. 62% of the county's units are ownership, and 38% are rental units, which is about the national average. Almost 94% of the county's homeless families were from the five largest cities. The greatest growth in population, what do you think the greatest growth in population is in terms of age in Westchester County?
Wow. Alec, I'm going to let you answer that.
Okay.
I can't even wager a guess.
The answer is 85 and over.
Really?
Yes, people are getting older. And for example, the towns of Lewisboro and Pound Ridge, they had increases from 2000 of 232% and 202% in that age population.
Wow.
Part of it probably due to the fact they can't sell their houses. That's one of the issues, which is, again, is a byproduct of what's been going on. The 30 to 44 age cohort shows decline, which indicates there's not enough affordable housing options for young families. More people commute into Westchester to work than those who live and work in the county, which is kind of interesting.
Which is where the workforce housing component comes in, right?
Exactly. And the majority of commuters, which is 58%, drive alone to work. The highest owner household incomes at over $250,000 are Scarsdale, not surprisingly, and the Village of Larchmont.
Okay.
City of Peekskill has the lowest owner household income of $87,000. In terms of renters, you've got the highest income, the highest renter household income, believe it or not, in Scarsdale is $207,000. That's the renter, the average renter income. City of Peekskill has the lowest renter household income at $36,453. So these are some kind of, there's a lot. I urge you to take a look at the report if you'd like to see it. It's you can get it on the Westchester website.
Westchestergov.com?
Yes, exactly. Okay. And it has some very good, about 12 recommendations to increase the housing inventory and to increase the affordable housing. The number that they found was that the county needed 11,703 new units to be constructed. And that's a lot, considering the federal consent decree, which we finished, was only supposed to do 107 units a year through 2016, from 09 to 2016. And we made it a little over that, but it's not even close to meeting the need. So I believe there are some very important policies that have to be implemented. And I'm hoping that there's more of a will to do this. What is good, and we have to say that, is this is primarily a problem of supply and demand, because we live in a market economy. And what's really good is a lot of the cities are building thousands of new units, and that is terrific. And even though they're being built at the high to rent for $3,500 or whatever, there's nothing in the market that says that that's what that has to rent for. So eventually supply and demand will come into balance. Not that fast, because as I say, we have such a lack of supply in the area.
Could you repeat the number of units that is needed according to the report? It's stunning to me.
Right, 11,703.
Wow.
That's basically that's the number of new housing units. It's actually a lot higher in terms of, there's like 83,000 people are paying more than they can afford, but in terms of new units, that's where we're at.
How can we inform municipalities or get the message to municipalities that they at least have to consider the staggering amount of units that are needed? How do we do that? I mean, that is a very difficult question. What would you recommend?
Well, it's kind of it's a hard question for me, because we had the whole weight of the entire federal government on us in the consent decree to change the attitudes of the municipalities that were considered to be exclusionary. And I don't think it succeeded, really. We had a model ordinance that was supposed to do, but because we have home rule, it has to come from within.
Right.
And the new county executive, who really understands the problem and probably more than any county executive could, because he was in the planning department in Mount Vernon, and he understands what it is at. But he has signaled his interest in trying to meet with the municipalities, and he's going to be starting to do that, George Latimer. He says he's going to start doing that, meeting municipality by municipality, trying to get that message that you just said. Mm-hmm. But he's going to try to do it with carrot rather than sticks.
Mm-hmm.
We've tried that. In the 29 years that I've been here, we've been trying carrots, sticks. My thinking is that carrots are better, but because NIMBYism is so ingrained, and the whole idea of suburbia was built on a model of exclusion, basically people wanting to get out of the city and away from the certain elements there, that is a very difficult thing to overcome, even though the affordable housing, when it's built, there's never any problems with it. I mean, they're beautifully maintained. The affordable housing projects, you know, talking about the affordable, which again, the low income, there's affordable. But they've been beautiful and maintained extremely well. So it's getting that initial, overcoming that initial difficulty to get approvals, et cetera, is the problem.
You mentioned NIMBYism. That, of course, is the acronym for not in my backyard. And sure, getting that feeling to change is a major task. There's no question about it. And that's part of the mission.
I'm thinking, though, one idea that I think may show some promise, and it's on the recommendations here, and that is accessory apartments.
Mm-hmm.
With Airbnb, the facts on the ground are changing. People are just renting their rooms, renting their houses illegally in most cases, but they need the money because they can't afford to continue. The single-family housing zone is under attack all over the country. Minneapolis just abolished it. It could happen here, potentially, where basically they won't allow single-family homes. Accessory apartments, I think, might be a good compromise for people that are really afraid of having multifamily development mm-hmm. in their areas because they're smaller, they're controlled. It's required that the homeowner live there, so they're not going to, they're going to make sure that the housing is maintained, that the people act, you know, properly, et cetera. And it's not going to increase the density to such a great extent. The fact is a lot of people are already doing accessory apartments illegally.
Mm-hmm.
If we found a streamlined way to allow homeowners to do this in a, you know, in a systematic and regulated way, I think that that would help the homeowners so they could better pay the taxes that are no longer deductible and also would provide some affordable housing to seniors.
Alec, thank you so much. A great job. We'd like to have you back to pursue that accessory apartment theory. Interesting stuff. Listeners, thank you for joining us on Building Knowledge. Please join us again next Friday morning, 11:30 a.m. here on WVOX, 1460 a.m. at WVOX.com. This is Jeff Hanley saying have a great weekend, everyone.